Hello and welcome to the premiere of The Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio addressing the issues that concern you. At first, I'd like to say a few things. In testing our software and hardware for this program, we ran into a few technical difficulties, which did affect the transmission. We're hoping we've worked around those, but if they recur, it may have some impact on the transmission of our program, at least from time to time. So if that happens, we ask you to bear with us as we continue to try to resolve those issues. Okay, let's get started. First, a little background on myself. I've held many different jobs in my working career, but much of that was spent as a working journalist on daily newspapers and magazines on both the East and West Coasts. I realize that's where the liberal elites are, but that's not me. This was with the old newspaper or paper print mass media, now largely a dinosaur as the digital revolution has brought big changes to this form of communications. I started my career in journalism decades ago as a young ingenue, thoroughly inculcated as a liberal. It took a move to New York City and years of working in the mass media before I began to see the light and change to more conservative political views. As a younger man, I chafed at what appeared to me as the oppressive confines of religion and existing social and political societal orders. I firmly sided with the then liberal established socio-political order in America. But as I eventually came to realize, the elites of that order generally despised me, and nothing I did would change this hatred for people like me. This led, as the years passed, to my realization that I have a lot more in common with people who embrace Christianity and more conservative political views than with the arrogant, self-righteous, hypocritical phonies of the left who seek to radically transform America into what has been said in reality would be a third world socialist hellhole. Of course, they don't see it that way. The problem for me was, and is, that the left has amassed so much power over so many people's lives today through their domination of our popular culture, that this threat is becoming a reality. Just look at what's happening on our southern border today. As I have long contended, the key to a takeover of America is mass migration from the third world. Panicked and terrified at the abrupt undermining by Donald Trump and his supporters of their decades-long brainwashing of the American public into accepting the supposed inevitability of socialism, the left is making an all-out push to destroy Trump and his movement, as he calls it. What many Americans don't realize is that the left today is made up of and controlled by fabulously wealthy individuals and even corporations like big tech that are increasingly dedicated to forcing their politics on us at almost any cost. Hence, the hundreds of millions, if not billions, being funneled to left-wing groups and organizations promoting this mass migration of millions of desperately poor and uneducated people from Latin America and other parts of the world into the United States. Here, these people can easily be manipulated into supporting the left, which offers them the biggest handouts and a cornucopia of benefits, and where their support can be relied on to help overthrow the existing order and bring about radical social, political, and economic transformation in America. Almost as dangerous are the never-Trumpers who are embedded in our government, political, judicial, educational, and social institutions. Many of these people have been making a good living themselves, going along with and even supporting the left's efforts at transforming America. And many of them hold high positions in government and social institutions. For example, one of these appears to be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, whose apparent contempt for Donald Trump seems all too obvious as he sides again and again with the four left-wing justices on the high court, blocking almost every attempt by the Trump administration and President Trump himself to bring about meaningful change to the existing order, the swamp, as they call it, in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere. We're in grave danger of losing our country and with it our freedoms and way of life. But many people simply don't realize that the left dominates the Democratic Party, the mainstream media, Hollywood, much of academia, that is, educational institutions, and other aspects of our popular culture through nonprofits and the like. Nor do they realize the powerful effect on shaping of their views that these forces have. If you're a Democrat, if you consider yourself a political liberal, then you stand with communists. You stand for the less hatreds and lies that are tearing apart the social fabric of this country. The left hates America. They hate white people, that is Caucasians, who they blame for what they see as most, if not all, of what's wrong in the world. They hate capitalism, despite many of them being amazingly well off economically under our capitalist system. They hate Christianity, which they see as being responsible for the underpinnings of our nation, which they despise. The left hates freedom of all kinds. That is the kind of, including many of the kinds of freedom that we continue to enjoy and prosper under here in the U.S. They hate the Second Amendment, which is understandable because it would enable resistance to their goal of all-powerful government. One of the left's mantras is the so-called climate change, also known as global warming. Leftists are constantly decrying how humans, through wanton hedonistic consumption, are destroying the environment. They predict that just a few more years of this will bring about cataclysmic environmental destruction. Have you heard that before? As in Al Gore? And they will tolerate no disputing of climate change, no matter how significant the scientific evidence to the contrary. Of course, the climate's always changing, but does it mean that we're going to be destroyed in a few years? I don't think so, but many people seem to embrace this. Millions of Americans still don't realize that there was essentially an attempted coup by the left and Never Trump to remove Donald Trump from office. The ridiculous Russia collusion hoax, in which it was alleged that Russia colluded with Donald Trump to win and thus steal the 2016 presidential election, resulted in the years-long investigation of Trump by special counsel Robert Mueller and his team of Democrat supporter lawyers. They failed to find even a shred of evidence of collusion or to remove Trump from office. But the fact that such a horrendous miscarriage of justice occurred is still lost on many Americans. Here are some excerpts from a recent Rush Limbaugh radio show where Rush, probably the top conservative talk radio host in America, is discussing the efforts by what has come to be known as the deep state or the swamp to overthrow President Trump by promoting and attempting to prosecute the hoax that Trump somehow colluded with Russia to win the presidency in 2016. Please play soundbite one.
This has always been a political effort to destroy Trump before the election and after, during the transition and after his inauguration. It has always been that. It has always been telegraphed. It's always been there for all of us to see. And now it is an existential war. And the stakes, I cannot tell you how high they are for our country. I think the stakes, without question, are the highest they have ever been in my life. The stakes for the country, what kind of country we're going to be going forward, the stakes have never been higher in my life. I'm 68 years old. I don't know how this would compare to Civil War. Obviously, it would pale in many ways to the divisions in the Civil War, but that was then and this is now. And I am telling you that the stakes for the country are the greatest, the highest they've ever been in my life. And if we let the people running this coup off, then we will have lost the republic to the deep state. These people must not get away with this. If they get away with this, they get away with the criminalization of policy differences, then we're finished.
As I've said, many Americans are going about their daily existence without the slightest idea about what we're facing. I don't know how many of you are familiar with David Horowitz and the Freedom Center he founded and runs. David Horowitz is, in my opinion, one of the great thinkers and writers in America today. His parents were Marxists, and he was a Marxist. And as a younger man, he enjoyed a reputation as one of the darlings of the political left, being an editor of the leftist Ramparts magazine. Then, after a friend of his was brutally murdered, he had a transformation. Today, Horowitz is among the greatest voices on the side of freedom and our current way of life. Let's listen to a few of Horowitz's comments from an interview with Newsmax TV some 6 years ago during the Obama administration. Would you please play soundbite number two now?
You're a conservative activist and an outspoken opponent of Marxism. Has President Obama swung the country toward the left, in your opinion?
Oh, dramatically. We're in a battle for the survival of this country. And to me, when I look at it, I think the outcome is uncertain. The left, what I would call the neo-communist left, is really the Democratic Party. I mean, there are a few good people left in the among elected officials or party officials in the Democratic Party. But the vision of that party is socialist, anti-capitalist, anti-individualist, and it's got us on a course that will bankrupt, well, it's already bankrupting our country. Obama is a radical of my generation. He actually comes from the worst part of the 60s, who was incredibly destructive, this country, and I think he is intent on bankrupting it and in diminishing our military to the point where we're a second-rate power.
In a June 23 article in the U.S. edition of left-leaning British publication The Guardian, the 100th anniversary of the Communist Party USA was hailed. The title of the article reads, "A Leftward Shift. Communist Party USA Sees Chance as Progressive Surge." The subtitle of the article reads, "In Chicago, an American party derided and feared for 100 years looked eagerly to a brighter future." It starts off, "As the Communist Party USA kicked off its 100th anniversary celebration, Jarvis Tyner called the delegates and guests at the National Convention in Chicago to, quote, set the record straight, unquote, about one of American politics' biggest political bogeymen, that is the Communist Party USA. The article continues, quote, "The truth is the Communist Party isn't out to hurt you," close quote. Tyner, vice chair of CPUSA and its candidate for vice president in 1972 and 1976, told a large and diverse crowd, quote, "It will set you free," close quote, Tyner said. Continuing, "The remarks met with applause and came on the first day of CPUSA's 31st National Convention, and at a moment in American politics in which democratic socialism and progressive ideas are increasingly finding a home in the mainstream of the Democratic Party," close quote. Communism will set us free, huh? Now, where in the world has communism set people free? The history and legacy of communism is terrible hatreds, mass murder, slavery, and terror. But these diehard progressives continue to deny the truths of history. Despite the monstrous evils committed by communists in the former Soviet Union, China, Cambodia, and so many other places around the world. That's the way leftists think. It's bizarre, but they never tire of turning things upside down with twisted logic. To the dedicated leftist, lies are truth. Hate is love. Oppression is justice. All you have to do is listen to the current crop of left-wingers running for the nomination for president of the Democratic Party to see just how much socialism has, quote, found a home, unquote, in the Democratic Party. Here are some comments by Rush Limbaugh on June 28th, the day after the second Democratic presidential debate in Miami. Play sound by three, please.
I have to tell you here, the Democrat Party is not just the country's biggest hate group now, which I have said on previous occasions, because that's what they are. It is what they have become. They are a self-contained hate group. They have more hate than any extreme right-wing group they claim to be afraid of or opposed to than you can count. They have more hate than any of the hate that was at Charlottesville. They've got more hate for us. The difference in the world is that their hatred for us is somehow justified and promoted. And since they are a hate group, they are the kingpins of hate in the American political system. They are the biggest threat to civil liberties. They are the biggest threat to freedom of speech. They are the biggest threat to the Second Amendment. They are the biggest threat to the innocence of unborn life. They are the biggest threat to anybody who is not one of them. They are the biggest threat to prosperity. They represent the biggest threat to private property. They represent the biggest threat to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that exists in this country today. The Democrat Party is that. That is what they have become. There isn't a right-wing group that can hold a candle to these people. The entire Democrat Party, there is no grandfather. There is no reasonable place to go in the Democrat Party where you get some wisdom. Their attitude, their views on abortion and human life is just shocking. They seek control over life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and they do so from a position of rage and anger. They are angry that the concepts of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness exist. And their mission is obviously to shut them down. Whatever it takes, for example, to save the planet from things human beings cannot and never have been able to control. But it will allow them to control people all over the country if they ever do achieve their climate change objectives. We all saw it last night. We all heard that last night. You ignore what you saw and you ignore what you heard last night at your own risk. We are one election away from the kind of dangerous rhetoric and behavior we saw last night. Tyranny taking over this country. One election away from it, folks. And it doesn't matter which of those 20 people, if any of them would win, doesn't matter which one we're talking about. They all are the same. They all represent the modern day Democrat Party. They all hate us and they all want to relegate us to a status of non-existence and irrelevancy. And their hatred for us is propelling them. They believe that there is more hatred for us than support for us. They obviously think that they're relating to a lot of people with these displays such as last night. So they must believe they're already the majority. They must believe that everybody hates Donald Trump the way they do. They must believe that everybody hates the NRA the way they do. They must believe that everybody hates big corporations the way they do. They must believe everybody hates the healthcare system the way they do. They must believe that everybody wants to put the government in control of all of this the way they do.
You'll find that most dedicated leftists exhibit, to a greater or lesser extent, three fundamental characteristics. One is self-righteous hate, usually disguised as righteous indignation at supposed great injustice. You're not able to debate with these true believers. If you oppose their quest to end injustice as they see it, you are wrong and you must be destroyed one way or another. A second key characteristic of the dedicated leftist is fraud. By that I mean deception. You see, in leftist ideology, the ends justify the means. Any lie, any trick, any amount of oppression is perfectly acceptable to achieve their goals along the road to utopia. That is why mass murder, slavery, and terror have been employed over and over again in advancing the interests of communism and the communist state around the world. A third characteristic of the American left is hypocrisy. We have all these fabulously wealthy elitists who advocate redistribution of wealth, but who expect to keep their own wealth. It's your and my wealth they want to redistribute for social and economic justice. The left rails against Donald Trump for supposedly advocating violence when he says that people attempting to violently disrupt his political rallies make you want to punch them. But longtime Democratic activist, actor Robert Babbling Bob De Niro, declares he wants to punch Trump in the face. Then De Niro gets summoned to the White House of then-President Obama and is awarded the Medal of Freedom. You see? Hypocrisy. I have a guest today who I'd like to introduce to you as someone who has lived close up with communism and can tell you about how it's impacted his and his family's lives. Cato, are you with us?
Yes, James. This
are you there, Cato?
Thank you for having me.
Yes, great. James, welcome to my show. I've asked you to talk with us today about you and your family's experiences with communism. You and I have known each other for years, and we've had many discussions about these experiences, and I wanted to share some of these with our audience today. I understand that your family fled communism on mainland China, moving to Hong Kong, where you were born. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. My family fled communism in 1949. went to Hong Kong as refugees where I was born. Yes.
And your father served in the Nationalist Chinese Armed Forces under Chiang Kai-shek?
No, my father did not serve under Chiang Kai-shek, who was at that time had the title of Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek, based in Nanking. At that time, between 1911, with the founding of the Republic of China and the overthrow of the Manchu Dynasty, until 1945, the end of the Second World War, we Cantonese were pretty much semi-independent. We have our own military. For example, during the Second World War, when war broke out with Japan in 1937, Chiang Kai-shek's navy, all of his ships were sunk before they have a chance to put out to sea to fight the Japanese. Whereas in Canton, we survived the initial onslaught. And the Cantonese navy took part in the defense of Hong Kong when the Japanese attacked Hong Kong the day after Pearl Harbor. So my father's uncle is a pretty well-known local commander, and my father served in the civilian branch. His job is to prevent the underground communists from infiltrating the military, the local government, and the school. And that's where my father, during one of the operations to eliminate a communist underground cell, he happened to save the life of three of the communist agents who were his schoolmates and childhood friends. And one of these people that he saved became a communist official after the communists won the Civil War in 1949. And this person helped my father to escape to Hong Kong.
I see. And your family eventually immigrated to the U.S. and you became a U.S. citizen. Tell us what happened to your family under the communists and why they chose to flee.
Yes, James. When the communists arrived, first the Liberation Army, so-called, and took over Canton, it took them several months to consolidate power. And then all the underground communist service, and then they were the one to put up a list of people to be eliminated in order for the so-called new society to begin. And when they first came, of course, they put to death the local mayor, the local village head, and the principal of the local middle school. Before the communists came, my father pleaded with my grandfather to flee. But my grandfather, who a few years ago just came back from Australia, he worked all his life and retired. He bought some property, and he was looking forward to retirement, and he did not know the nature of communism. For him, it was just those periodic change of dynasty, long history. And he used to tell my father that, oh, for us FH people, any change of dynasty does not really matter as long as you pay taxes to a different emperor. But after the communists take over and consolidate power and start killing people, putting people in front of firing squad, and confiscated all land, including the property owned by my grandfather. And the person that my father saved secretly told my father that he knew my grandfather has been put on the list for the follow-up, what they call the Great Purge. So that's when my grandfather really got scared and agreed to escape with my father to Hong Kong.
I see. You and I have had many discussions about the neo-communist left's threat to America. How do you see the current political situation here in the U.S.?
Yes, James, I'm really worried because let me remind your audience that before the communists take power, internally they promised the majority of the Chinese people who were dirt poor that they will confiscate all land of the so-called rich and then redistribute all the land. That's why internally they have the support of the majority of the poor folks in China. And internationally they have the help of the liberal media. For example, in the U.S., the Chinese Communist Party, which itself is actually part of a global Soviet communist conspiracy, they were portrayed in the U.S. as a indigenous Chinese democratic reform movement. And in fact, if you look back at the newspaper report in 1949 on the eve of the communist takeover, the majority of the U.S. opinion were in favor of the communists. That's one reason that U.S. Congress cut off all funding to Chiang Kai-shek, leading to his downfall. And when the communists took over in China, they eliminated, that means they put to death without due process, over 2 million Chinese, which is a conservative estimate. The only crime supposedly committed by these 2 million innocent people is because they own property. After they were eliminated, the land was distributed to the poor, the proletariat. So for the first 3 years of the communist occupation, a lot of people were supposedly very happy. But of course, in 1955, when the communists felt that they have finally consolidated power, that they have eliminated all opposition in mainland, they took back all the land. And in fact, that's when they established the so-called commune. And the communist system, the Communist Party became the only land owner in China. That's the real nature of communist redistribution. You know, and they just hollow out the middle class. And I really worry about for this country, because with the Democratic Party moving more and more to the extreme left, and all the programs they propose, universal health care, free college education, who's going to pay for it? The middle class. And I'm reminded that the fall of the Roman Empire began not with the barbarians at the gate, but with the destruction of the Roman middle class by heavy taxation. Because the ruling class at that time, they needed the money to pay for and serve the so-called proletariat, including free entertainment in the Colosseum. So before the barbarians arrived at the gate of Rome, Rome was already ready to fall because the middle class is no more. And I'm worried that this country is going that direction.
Do you believe, as I do, that we face a grave situation here in America today as the left, which dominates our mainstream media, the Democratic Party, much of our educational and social institutions, and the popular culture in general, as the left is seeking to overthrow our current president, take over Congress, and impose ever greater control over our lives? Do you agree with me about that?
Yeah, James, I agree wholeheartedly, because coming from our background, I knew how the U.S., the left media, as I said earlier, manipulated public opinion in the United States so that the U.S. government at that time, President Truman, at the outbreak of the Chinese Civil War in 1948, sent General Marshall to China to force Chiang Kai-shek to negotiate with the communists to stop attacking the communists militarily and to form a coalition government to share power. And when Chiang Kai-shek refused, because he knew the nature of communism, having visited the Soviet Union once before the Second World War and wrote a book about it. By the way, my father gave me the book written by Chiang Kai-shek called The Ambition of the Soviet Union in China. And so Chiang's government was forced to collapse because the U.S. Congress cut off all funding, whereas on the other side, the Soviet Union supported financially and militarily the Chinese communists in their rise to power. Many people don't know that when the Chinese communists were formed in 1927, they called themselves the Chinese Soviet. And from 1927 until they seized power in China in 1949, all the land that they grabbed was called, in Chinese, so-called meaning, you know, liberated area under the Soviet. So they see themselves as part of the global communist movement. And the communists, by its very nature, have a global agenda. And they are anti-poverty, they're anti-rule of law, they're anti-freedom. And I'm really afraid that in this country, as you said, in our discussions in the last few years, I really come to believe many of what you told me is so true, that my mind is opened by what you, over the years, that you have taught me, James.
Well, thank you. You know, I've often considered you, long considered you a kindred spirit here. I wanted to ask again, is there anything you wanted to convey to the audience about what you've learned and from your past experiences that you could pass on to the rest of us here in America that might help us resist this great threat to our freedoms and way of life?
Yes, James. My father, he always tell me one of the reasons the communists were so successful in China was because they won the war, the propaganda war. That's my father, what he said. And because they control the media. And they were able to portray inside China that they are the future savior of the Chinese masses because they are going to redistribute wealth to make the society egalitarian. And internationally, they were able to convince especially people in the United States that they were an indigenous, progressive, democratic party. And I think the my fellow American citizens must open up their eyes to the manipulation of news by the left media. They must be, I'm so glad that President Trump is the first person that come out and point out the nature of fake news. And I really urge people who listen to this program to continue to support the James program because James have great insight based on his knowledge and experience. And he will be able to shed a light on all the dirty tricks by the left, especially the Democrats and the communists. I'm so getting so a little bit emotional because this is about the survival of the United States as a country and our democratic system, our democratic ideal of liberty, the respect for the rule of law, and also the respect for property. And finally, I just want to say a word about all of this so-called Confucian Academy that's popping up everywhere in this country and also throughout the world. It is a massive propaganda program funded by the Chinese communists, and according to the latest figure, they have opened shops in over 60 countries, including the Soviet Union, South Korea, Australia, and Ireland. And they say that ostensibly they are just teaching Mandarin, but actually it's a propaganda program to sway public opinion throughout the world. And I really urge people to look into this so-called Confucian Academy, and please do not fall into the traps. That's all I have to say, James.
Yes, you're talking about the Confucius Institutes the Chinese government has been founding around the world, including on many U.S. college campuses. Well, Cato, thank you so much for coming on my show and sharing your experiences and insights with us today. I really appreciate it.
James, is an honor and a
privilege. Go ahead.
All right. I will be listening to your program faithfully from now on.
Thank you so very much. I'd like to read some excerpts from one of David Horowitz's many books. This is one of the most recent ones he's published, I believe. It's called Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. Fascinating book with a lot of very good information in it. In the last chapter titled Civil War, Horowitz has some very interesting things to say. I wanted to start out with the first part of the chapter. Quote, with the victory of Donald Trump in the 2016 election, the nation's political divisions reached new levels of acrimony and distrust. Before the new president had settled into the Oval Office, congressional Democrats were boycotting his inauguration, calling for his impeachment, and declaring their opposition movement a resistance, quote unquote. Elsewhere in the chapter, Horowitz continues, the actual origins of America's current political divisions can be traced to the emergence of the radical left in the 1960s and the riot they staged at the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. Police and National Guardsmen were forced to battle thousands of rioting members of such groups as the Youth International Party, the Yippies, the Black Panthers, and Students for a Democratic Society. The fallout from this debate, the fallout from this debacle destroyed the presidential hopes of Vice President Hubert Humphrey, a liberal whose sin was to have supported America's anti-communist war in Vietnam. Humphrey's defeat paved the way for radicals to move into the Democratic Party en masse, changing its structures and then its politics. Among the radicals' first achievements was the creation of congressional caucuses based on race, ethnicity, gender, and support for progressive causes. These caucuses provided the platforms from which they advanced their leftist agendas within the party, agendas focused on, quote, identity politics, unquote, and making America the bad guy. Horowitz continues, over the next 4 years, the far-left radicals, led by Tom Hayden and Jane Fonda, marched into Democratic Party and swept traditional liberalism away. They replaced it with a leftism that views American society as a system of oppressive hierarchies based on race, gender, and sexual orientation. Leftists believe these hierarchies must be overthrown. Theirs is a collectivist ideology rooted in Marxism that is opposed to the American ideals of individual rights, individual accountability, and individual equality. By promising that America oppresses, by proposing that America oppresses races and genders, it is a political, it is a politics that is blind to the opportunities and rights that America actually offers to all these citizens. And continuing on elsewhere in the chapter, Horowitz relates, quote, patriotism is not a term of endearment to people on the left, to the globalist elites or the Democrats generally, who have found it difficult since Korea to support America's wars against its enemies. The racial haters on the left, in the Democratic Party and the media generally, have twisted Trump's patriotism and condemned it as a jingoistic and bigoted bravado. Unable to attack patriotism directly, Democrats attack Trump's love of country by calling it, quote, white nationalism, unquote, and, quote, white supremacy, quote, quote. That is, white racism. And finally, Horowitz ends the discussion of these things in his book with some very further interesting comments, which I'd like to convey to you. I think we have time here. Here we go. Quote, it took a civil war and 200 years of sacrifice and struggle to achieve a society that approaches the ideals laid down in our country's founding documents. That achievement is now endangered by a party committed to an identity politics that is the antithesis of the ideas and principles of the founding established. Instead of cherishing religious liberty and individual freedom, the Democrats offer us a reversion to tribal loyalties and collectivist values. They regard immutable origins, skin color, ethnicities, genders, and classes as primary factors in judging individuals and determining what is just. A nation divided by such fundamental ideas, individual freedom on one side and group identity on the other, cannot long endure, any more than could a nation that was half slave and half free. The urgency that drew the religious right into politics 50 years ago is now an urgency of the nation itself. Powerful stuff. I wanted to play another soundbite, which includes some comments by David Horowitz in an interview with former Trump advisor Sebastian Gorka on Gorka's new radio show on the Salem Network, America First. Would you play soundbite four, please?
The left hates America. It hates freedom. It wants to remake the world, and it wants to use government to force you to remake it. I mean, look at the Green New Deal. You shouldn't call this socialist. This is communist. They're creating a police state,
David,
which they will do.
David, in the minute we have left with you, what is your message to all Americans? What do they need to do to stop this from happening?
You need to fight. You've got to get involved and defend your communities. And Republicans and conservatives are too damn polite, too nice, too civilized.
Yes, I have to agree with him here. Now, when he talks about fighting, obviously Horowitz is not issuing a call to violence, as some of Trump's opponents actually have. Those of us who believe in freedom and traditional American values have got to get involved politically, morally, socially, to oppose the left far more vigorously than the tepid resistance that occurred all too often in the recent past. And we've got to work at waking up more people to get involved with us before it's too late. Well, my friends, we've come up a little short in our presentation tonight, but that's the show for this week. I hope you found what we've had to say of interest. Look for us about 2 weeks from tonight on the 28th of July. And we look forward to making some more and more extensive presentations of conservative thought. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.